Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have an important show on one I'm looking forward to. We're going to speak with a physician who understands the scourge, if you want to put it that way, which is affecting the entire world, and that's cancer. It's something that nobody wants to hear. No one wants that diagnosis. But I think we need to start thinking outside of the box so that we can take our power back. I think people are paralyzed with fear and it just makes them shut down. And that's not the time that you should do that. And we're going to speak with Dr. Kevin Connors. He is the founder and clinic director at Connors Clinic. It's an alternative cancer treatment center in St. Paul, Minnesota. He graduated with his doctorate from Northwestern Health Sciences University in 1986, and he's been studying alternative cancer care for over 18 years. He also holds AMA fellowships and board certifications in anti-aging medicine, regenerative and functional medicine, botanical medicine, and he's board certified in integrative cancer therapy. He's also certified in functional neurology and has over 300 hours graduate study in the autism spectrum disorders and certified in epigenetic clinical methylation and nutrigenomics. He's practicing applied kinesiologist with an emphasis on botanical medicine and homeopathy. And he's written in numerous books, but I think his most recent is called Stop Fighting Cancer and Start Treating the Cause. And you can get that for free at a download at his connorsclinic.com/books. So Dr. Connors, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Well, this is great. Thank you for having me. I appreciate your show. Got to look at all the information that you provide, and that's really what it is. It's trying to give information and get information out there, the truth, when, especially now, what we've seen in the last couple of years, the truth is kind of hard to find.
I absolutely agree. And when you find it, you have to hold on to it because it disappears pretty quickly. So this, you're absolutely right. The show is about giving people the information so they can be able to make a conscious choice. And as a physician, I believe in the power of the patient and the power of the patient to make an informed decision. And it's not one size fits all. Never has been, never will be. And I think we, as in a doctor-patient relationship, that sacred part of healing is about listening to each other. And what you offer, which I'm looking forward to our conversation, is really alternatives, thinking outside the box and giving people hope. I think that's one thing. When my mom was diagnosed with cancer a while back, I remember the conversation I had with her neurologist, and it still to this day just upsets me. Because I asked him what her prognosis was, and he said, oh, she's going to die, just like that. And I'm a physician. So I can imagine what it would be like for somebody in fear of getting that diagnosis and have somebody who's not their advocate, who doesn't have hope, who is just matter of fact. That's part of the healing process, right? It's about giving people hope.
Well, it is a big part of the healing process. I remember that you said that it brought back to memory years ago when I first started seeing cancer patients. Well, it was a few years into it. But I had a patient that was given 3 months to live, and it was about a year and a half later, and he was still alive. And he went back to his oncologist. The oncologist said, well, that isn't doing anything for you. All it's doing is giving you hope.
Oh,
I told the guy, if that's all I did is give somebody hope and that helped them live longer, isn't that the whole purpose? So it's interesting that you said that. It is a big part of what we're called to do as physicians, is to be realists, not over optimistic, but to tell the patient that this is in God's hands. We don't know the answer to this. We aren't God. And we're going to do everything we can to help save your life and to prolong your life. And when you do that, you stop playing God like so many doctors do, and put yourself back in a healthy position and a safe advocate for the patient.
And that's the position of power, right? That's the power of the doctor-patient relationship, that nobody can take a, you know, insert themselves and mess up. Just to finish my mom's story, she died 7 years later of something completely different. So he was absolutely wrong. And she got to move to the Caribbean and enjoy her life. And I'm grateful every day that we didn't listen to him. And like most doctors, I learned that it's not all about the textbook. And we started nutritional therapy, juicing. We did all sorts of things in addition to the standard treatment, and she thrived. So I want my listeners to understand that, and that's what they listen to the show. I'm sure they probably understand by now, is that health is more than a prescription. It's not just a medication. And it's about treating the whole patient from the cell level out. And I'd love to start our conversation by asking the question that nobody ever asks, pretty much. When people get diagnosed, it's always about the treatment. Does anybody ever ask, how did I get cancer? Is that a question that you see come up in your practice?
We see that a lot. And as part of the reason why I think we see it is because we talk about it on our website. I talk about it in my book. Obviously, the title of the book is Stop Treating Cancer and Start Treating the Cause. So it's going to only draw people that are wondering about that. So we do hear a lot of people say, I asked my oncologist, why did I get this? What's the cause? Mm-hmm. And they always tell them, well, we don't know. And the sad thing about that is that there's a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of money poured into cancer research over the last 50 years. And many times it's looking for causes of cancer, and they're finding them. They're finding pesticides and chemicals and all the exposure to heavy metals and exogenous estrogens. And they're finding all these causes and listing them, and maybe they'll publish multiple articles about them and even have news reports on them. But then never does the oncologist look for those or address those in their treatment protocol. So it's like, why do we need to know if bad estrogens in our environment cause cancer? They're not going to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's confusing to the patient when they go to the oncologist and they're told, okay, you have breast cancer. Well, what's the cause? Well, we don't know, but here's the treatment: chemotherapy, surgery, radiation. These are your choices, and never addressing, you know, there's toxin involvement. We need to do detox. We need to support your liver. We need, you know, never is that addressed. Not that chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery may be appropriate for the patient, but why is all the research on causes ignored, mm-hmm. and that never being, you know, brought up to the patient and them giving any solutions about it? It's mind-boggling sometimes.
It is mind-boggling. And then the flip side is to poo-poo it. I mean, make the patient feel badly about asking the question. Or if they do have a good outcome by not going outside of their treatment parameter, then all of a sudden it doesn't count. Or, I mean, that's just, to me, it's dishonest, and it's not right. And it's about ego driving. And I'm kind of done with that. And I think one of the most important things that you do is to empower the patient. And I want to discuss that further when we come back. So let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Kevin Connors, and he's the author of Stop Fighting Cancer and Start Treating the Cause. And he has his clinic, Connors Clinic, in St. Paul, Minnesota. And before the break, we were talking about the lack of intellectual curiosity, really, about how people get sick. I mean, I just had a conversation with one of my patients about if you treat the symptom, but you never get to treat the problem, you're only going to be back with the same complaint. And I refuse to do that. We're going to get to the root cause. And just, it doesn't make sense to me that there's no intellectual curiosity out there about how something starts. It's, you're right, a ton of money poured into various causes and pink ribbons and all sorts of things that people make people feel good about trying to help each other. But they don't talk about the foods that we eat or doing deep testing to figure out if we really are toxic. How do they, is that something that you think it's a medical school issue, or do you think it's just no time to actually delve because people are seeing people on average 7 minutes a visit?
I think it's both. Certainly those things are not being taught in medical school. And unfortunately we're seeing, you know, long gone are the days of Marcus Welby doctors out there. And many of your listeners might not even know who Marcus Welby is, but that was a doctor who spent time with their patient to really understand them and look at them more holistically. Mm-hmm. So yes, that's not being taught in medical school. And we are graduating doctors that are basically just pharmaceutical technicians, let's be honest. So their job is to, number one, not get sued for malpractice. Number two, to label a diagnosis either through scans, CT, MRI, blood tests, some technology. I often say if this country instantly lost electricity, doctors wouldn't know what to do because, you know, you can't run a scan, you can't get a blood test, which is sad. Our practice of medicine has certainly changed. And then as you pointed out, doctors don't have any time that they're spending with patients. But I agree with you. The mind-boggling part is, isn't there not any, at least some intellectual curiosity on their part to do they have any kind of sense of wonder of, wow, how could we do something else better? Mm-hmm. You know, the majority of my patients are dying. Is there something else we could do better?
That would be the first thing, to not just manage something, but actually heal somebody. That's one of the things that made us go into medicine. And I do know who Marcus Welby was because I watched it every week. And that's something that drove me to want to be a doctor. So I guess we're old school, but that's a good thing.
Yes, I think so. I do.
Now, I read your bio, and it sounds, when you think about anti-aging medicine, regenerative and functional medicine, and botanical medicine, you think of them as being maybe disparate, but they're actually not. They're all actually connected, aren't they? That's how we delve into the problems that help our patients.
Oh, absolutely. You have to look at the person as a whole. And that is another part of the problem of modern medicine is it's all separated into systems. Oh, you have, stomach problem, let's send you to the gastroenterologist. You have some urinary issues, let's send you to the urologist. But the person is a whole person. Maybe their GI issues are tied to the urinary issues because they have gut dysbiosis and dysbiosis in their urinary tract also. So the less you look at the person as a whole, the worse care that the person's going to end up with. And unfortunately, it does have to tie back to time and how much time people have with their patients. And it's a system that unfortunately I don't think is getting any better.
No, but I think patients are getting wiser. I'm seeing a lot more people who don't want to take a medication who are willing to do the due diligence. And that means going down to what they're putting in their mouths, and what they're eating. And that's something that I've come into recently, the importance of our diet, right? And from being vegan or intermittent fasting, these strategies actually can either pull you back in some instances from the brink of disease and actually, balance things. Is that a good way to think about them?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the old saying that you are what you eat, and we could expand that to you are whatever you don't detoxify, is completely true. And if you don't pay attention to those things, you're going to suffer the consequences. And if you do pay attention to those things, you're going to reap the benefits. So the more that you can do that, the better solution. Doesn't mean you're not going to end up be disease-free your whole life, but at least you'll be able to address the things in a way that's going to be the most applicable for you and give you the best outcome.
Now, I know that people want to be proactive, and nobody wants to wait until they get a diagnosis, but how would you tell people to really, obviously, it seems like a big, how do I push this rock uphill? It seems overwhelming, but how would you get people to start making changes that are small, incremental, so they can kind of ease into it?
Well, the biggest thing is okay, just starting just from a dietary perspective, to start realizing what I just stated. You are, you are a component of what you eat, and that does feed your cells. And if you want to stay healthy, you have to feed yourself well. I mean, you look at people are, I heard a comment the other day about young people today are wreaking havoc to their veterinarians because they're demanding healthier food and healthier things for their pets. And I think we often treat our pets better than we treat our own body. And there's some truth to that. If we could just start looking at making better choices along the way, you're going to have less chance of ill effects down the line. So I think it's the best way to deal with it is to make small choices that you can stick with and that can be lifestyle changes, instead of trying to like, okay, I got to go vegan, and you can do it for 5 days as you quit. So make small choices that are wise, like stay away from so many chemicals, try to eat more organic, try to buy things in the grocery store that are perishable. It's those little choices that will reap rewards down the way.
Now, when you're talking about eating healthy, we have to get rid of the things. I mean, it's all about functional and metabolic and cellular health, right? So let's say you've started your process. There's so many arguments and theories about detoxing. Something that you really have to do with being mindful, right? Can you overdo it that you detox in such a way that you overwhelm your system, so it's not a gentle path that you're able to remove things in a healthy way, as opposed to, you know, the toxic crisis where you feel really bad while you're doing it, for example?
Oh, sure. Well, we talk about the seven, what I call the seven phases of detox, which really starts with phase seven, which I would call proper elimination. So if you're not moving your bowels at least once a day, then you have no business trying to do any sort of quote unquote detox. If you're not getting out what's on the inside of your intestinal tract, you're reabsorbing it. So just understanding the process of detoxification. Well, everybody thinks I got to do a detox, so I'm going to buy this liver detox nutritional kit that has milk thistle and some other herbs in it to help push the phase one and phase two pathways in the liver. Well, then it has to go to phase three, which is conjugating it to bile in the liver, and then moving it to phase four, it flowing through the gallbladder. And if you have gallstones and a slow gallbladder, it's going to back everything upstream. So you got to worry, you got to concern with phase four, making sure that you have non-viscous or less viscous bile, meaning not so sludgy. Make sure that you don't have gallstones, that you maybe want to do a gallbladder cleanse first. And then phase five is getting it into the small intestine. Phase six is being able to bind it in the small intestine and get it out of the body. So you have to make sure you're not reabsorbing those toxins, and that you're eliminating it. And then, so before you're doing like a chelator to pull heavy metals out of your body, you have to make sure that you're eliminating through the, you know, through your bowel movements, that you're binding it in the gut, so you're not reabsorbing it, that you're making sure your gallbladder is healthy and you don't have gallstones, and that your bile is flowing real well, that your phase two and phase one pathways are doing well. And the only way to really know that is to really look at your genetics. But that's another story. And then you have the right to do like chelation and such, mm-hmm. which will pull it out of the tissues and put it in back into circulation so that your liver can deal with it through those pathways. So you kind of got to have to go backwards with detoxification. And if you do that, starting gently with making sure that your bowel movements are doing good, whether you use some magnesium or some senna or coffee enemas, and then you move to making sure you add a binder to bind stuff in the gut to, so you're not reabsorbing it, and looking at your gallbladder, maybe getting an ultrasound of your gallbladder to make sure you don't have gallstones that you're dealing with that you need to flush. I think that's the best method that you're not going to have a detox or Herxheimer reaction.
So it sounds to me that you should be in the care of someone like yourself, someone who can walk you through. There's so many do-it-yourself kits you just described. I know most people would grab that. And I've heard that patients tell me they just do these kits and they feel bad afterwards. But it really does make sense to have somebody aligned with you, a physician like yourself, who understands and respects all of the pathways. I mean, it's like doctors have forgotten cell biology almost, like it doesn't exist and it just gets ignored completely. And we're just, as you said at the beginning, you pile medicines on, but they're not fixing the problem. And I've seen all these side effects. People are medicines for the side effect of another medicine, but they don't seem to be treating the root. It always seems to be around it somehow.
Well, it is. And I bet the drugs are all out there just to treat a diagnosis, which is typically just a collection of symptoms. Mm-hmm. And then they have drugs for treating the side effects of that product that they're using to treat the diagnosis. So it's a mess. It's really,
it's absolutely a mess. I know we're going to take a break in a few seconds, but I wanted to begin the conversation because you mentioned epigenetics, and I'm not sure people know what that is. But, you know, we're talking about genes and how they're everything. Well, people think they're everything, but it's about expression. And I wanted to go over that with you because I think it's important for people to understand. And let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Kevin Connors, and his clinic is Connors Clinic in St. Paul, Minnesota. And before the break, we were talking about epigenetics, and that's a big topic, I know, but I wanted to kind of open the box on it so people understand that it's not just your genes. I mean, just because you have a diagnosis or you carry the gene for a specific ailment, it doesn't always mean that you're definitely going to get it, right?
Oh, absolutely. So there's very few diseases that are caused by your genes. When we look at genes, we look at more of a functional approach to genes. So when we do a whole genetic profile on somebody, we're looking at how are their genetics to their detox pathways, continuing with the conversation we just had. Mm-hmm. So you have specific genes for your phase one detox pathways. Those are typically your cytochrome P450 pathway genes. You have other genes for your phase two. Some of those are your PON1 genes, and there's others. So we look at those genes. Does a person have a lot of defects in those? Then they have the possibility, if that's so, to have slower detox pathway. So let's say two people are exposed to the same amount of toxins, and one person is able to get rid of it real easy, and another person seems to not get rid of their toxins and seems to have ill effects. Well, one possible reason is that person that has more problems in getting rid of toxins, they could have more defects on their genes that are responsible for those specific detoxification pathways in the liver. So it causes slower detoxification. Doesn't mean they're going to die. It doesn't mean you're bound to get a disease. It doesn't mean you're bound to have problems, but it means that you should probably pay more attention to the toxins that you're being exposed, you're allowing yourself to be exposed to. Maybe you shouldn't work in that paint factory because you're, the chance of having possible ill effects is there. So there's some proactive steps that a person could take by looking at their genetic makeup and go, wow, you know, I don't detox coffee very well according to this gene, so maybe I shouldn't drink so much coffee, or I definitely have some defects on my PON1 pathway. That's a specific phase 2 liver pathway. So I should really, you know, not spray my lawn. Nobody should spray their lawn with chemicals, but even more so, that person shouldn't be spraying their lawn with chemicals. Mm-hmm. So it can help you guide some decision-making process by knowing what your genes, you know, look like.
Can you also, aside from looking at the physical side of it, you know, what the genes are, and I always have this mindset that mind and body are connected. So those genes are kind of, I wouldn't say labile, it's a bad way to put it, but they can be expressed or not expressed based on your frequency. And your frequency changes based on how you see things and if you're a positive or a negative person. Is that a way that people can think about taking power, about how they approach things and how they see life?
Yeah. For sure. Well, in anything, I mean, we even say that with patients that, you know, we're a cancer clinic. So people come to us that have a diagnosis of cancer. Okay, well, some of the first things you have to deal with is you got to get the patient to overcome the thought that this is a death sentence. We're all going to die, you know, unless the Lord comes back before that. But so you got to, whether he takes us home with cancer or takes us home with something else, you got to stop thinking about that and having your mind be consumed by negative things like that. Mm-hmm. Even when you get a grave diagnosis, you have to go, okay, well, I have to be a realist. I have to do something about this. I got to reassess some things in my life, some things I may need to change, some thought patterns I might need to change, but then I'll make those changes and I'll move forward. The diagnosis is tattooed on your forehead. You better not let it be tattooed on your frontal lobe of your brain, because those are the people that tend not to do well, that can't surrender that back to God and take ownership of it, are the ones that tend not to have good outcomes. So yes, is it mind over matter? No, but is it taking control of your own thoughts and not letting somebody else put outcomes in your head and that you buy into those and you take ownership of that? Yes. That's a big part of healing, is taking, like you said, responsibility back for your own health. Nobody's going to tell me what my outcome is. Mm-hmm. That's not the doctor's responsibility.
I love that. I absolutely agree with that. And I have a corollary question to that. You know, we talk about all these different cancers, but is there a fundamental trigger that underpins them? Like, does your immune system take a dip? Is it too much sugar? Is there anything that as an underlying trigger, not necessarily cause, but predisposes you to have cells go off track? Something that we could change?
There isn't one. There's many. You see it common triggers for breast cancers are emotional upsets by somebody that you're close to, maybe an abusive husband or a child that goes, you know, off course. That's a common trigger with breast cancers. Common trigger for colon cancers have to do with people that have not become good at letting things go. and tend to hold on to things and emotions we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And so there are different emotional pieces to every cancer. And there's always an emotional tie to everything, whether it be a good thing or we deem it a bad thing, like a disease. So you do want to investigate that. You never want to lay blame, though. I don't think that's healthy. Like, oh, it's my abusive husband. He caused this or whatever. That's not taking a healthy approach to it. But you do have to look at and assess things in your life that you need to change. And you need to let any disease be your wake-up call and not allow yourself to become the victim of a disease. I think the worst thing to do is say, oh, I have cancer, or oh, I have Lyme disease, or oh, I have this disease, that now you're the victim of it. Mm-hmm. You've just given your power over to that diagnosis. And the chance of you overcoming it is dropped dramatically. You might say, hey, yeah, I have been diagnosed with cancer. Okay, now I have to take an active stance of what am I going to do about it? What do I need to learn from this? What is this teaching me? How can I overcome this? What are my best solutions? It's a very different, two very different approaches there.
Do you find that people who are spiritual or have a spiritual connection are able to make that turn where they're invested in what they can do to help themselves, as opposed to I'm a goner kind of mentality?
I think it reveals a person's spiritual connection. So when you're given a grave diagnosis like cancer, we have patients that I'll talk to on the phone in their initial case review that they tell me that they're Christians or whatever spiritual, that they're very spiritual people, but their anxiety is palpable. And then there's people that don't tell me anything about their spiritual life, but they're at such unbelievable peace. So I think any disturbing thing that happens to us in life, whether it be a diagnosis of cancer or whether our house burns down, it's normal and human to go through emotions and to grieve that loss of what we had, whether it be good health or a home. But then you have to come through it with a sense of, okay, I'm not going to be the victim here. What am I going to do about it? What steps am I going to take? And act rationally in faith that there's a brighter day. So I think you could say, do people of faith go through difficult times better? The answer is yes, but I think difficult times reveal the depth of one's faith. And sometimes that is what is needed to be learned. And that's where a person needs to grow, and the disease or the difficult time can reveal that. And you either are going to learn from that and grow from that and become a deeper spiritual person, or you're not. And that's the choice that we all have to make.
That's well said. And I think everybody's gone through, and the older you get, I think you handle it with a little bit more grace because you've seen it before. But it's from a cellular standpoint, that balance seems to be that the cortisol level and the physiologic changes that go that happen depending on how you approach things, they either help or hurt you, don't they?
They sure do. Yeah, because your body can fight against you and help you destroy yourself if you allow it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take our last break because I want the last segment to talk about some solutions like supplements and vitamins and things that we can do to make sure that we have all the building blocks we need to help ourselves, so in case and also to prevent. On that note, you're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Kevin Connors. And Dr. Connors, I know you have your clinic. Do you just see people in Minnesota, or do people come from all over the country?
We actually see people from all over the world. We have patients from Sweden and Australia and Bulgaria and so everywhere. Most our patients are not from Minnesota. Probably 85% are from out of state for sure. Most are from the U.S., but not from Minnesota. So patients do fly into our clinic to do what we call our two-day intensive, where we really kickstart their whole program and get them started on a whole nutritional approach and dietary approach. And we use frequency medicine with Rife. And then they go home and then they have constant connection with us. So they can call us and connect with us, ask questions. And we do weekly Zoom calls for our patients and such. And we see patients at a distance. So we have some patients that are not healthy enough to travel. We don't want them traveling. It would be against, it would be detrimental to their body to do so. So we have a distance program. So we're doing everything via telemedicine. And we've done that for quite a few years. So, but we are currently are focused mainly on, really, we're only taking cancer patients at this point in time. Okay. But we used to see a lot of other functional medicine patients over the years as well.
Well, that's nice to know that it's, you don't have to be mobile to be helped, which is awesome. So let's delve now into the nutritional side. I know I read somewhere, which is really ridiculous, that vitamins don't work. I think it was probably underwritten by big pharma. It was one of these ads that was put online, and I was shocked that I read that. But let's talk about vitamins. Vitamin D, for example, is that something that's important to help boost the immune system and help your body fight insults?
Well, that is, it is. And I find that to talk about that comment is ridiculous because without vitamins, you'll die. So you're either, I'm always probably talking about vitamin supplements, but supplements are just that, supplements to your diet. So if you're not getting your nutrition through your diet, you need to supplement it or you're going to be deficient. The problem is our food is so deficient. Even if you're eating organic food, it's deficient in the right nutrients that you need. So supplementing is almost a necessity if you really want to maintain health, and certainly if you want to regain health. So speaking to vitamin D, vitamin D is a hugely important supplement to stimulate your immune system. It's really a hormone, fat soluble, so it will store in your body. It's a big immune boost, but it also is helps you produce other hormones in your body. So it's a very important nutrient.
What about iodine? You don't hear a lot about that, but my understanding, it's one of the most common things that we're deficient of.
So yeah, iodine is necessary for you to make T3, which is your thyroid hormone, and T4. And the problem is that we are commonly exposed to heavy metals. Mm-hmm. Aluminum and mercury and lead are the most common things that we're exposed to. And those they're very close to iodine on the periodic table. So if you're deficient in iodine, your thyroid can take up those other heavy metals and it doesn't work to make those hormones. So you look at how many people are hypothyroid or have Hashimoto's today. It's mind-boggling. And it's really because we are deficient in iodine and we're exposed to heavy metals that we should never have been exposed to. So taking iodine can help prevent, even though you are exposed to other heavy metals, can help prevent those taking the place of iodine in the thyroid. So it's very important.
Next one is magnesium, which we talked about at the beginning about helping your body be able to detox by having bowel movements. But magnesium is pretty key, isn't it?
Well, magnesium is probably the most important mineral that you can be exposed to because it is an essential cofactor in about 70% of your metabolic pathways. needs magnesium to run that pathway. So if you're deficient in magnesium, it could be a piece of so many different disease processes. And magnesium is an inexpensive, simple thing to take. It does help with bowel movement simply because if you take magnesium and you take more than your body needs at that given time, it will just dump it into the colon. And because it's a positive ion, it draws water and it helps you with your bowel movements. And that's how you can know if I'm taking too much magnesium is I have too loose of bowel movements, then back off on your magnesium. But magnesium is an essential nutrient, it's a cofactor in so many pathways.
Okay. And what about zinc? We're hearing a lot about that to help fight viral processes. And that seems to be deficient in a lot of people, men specifically, right?
Yeah, it is. Very important for immune system. Viral process is very important for cancer. We see an issue, we could have a whole show on the balance between copper and zinc. And we could say that we probably have a copper toxicity in our country, especially people that have been using, have houses that have copper pipes. And you can't change it out very easily. So what you need to do if you don't have copper pipes, you need to start taking some zinc because you have to have a 2-to-1 ratio of zinc to copper in your body or that can be a major driver for cancer. I've heard a lot in the last year about zinc with the immune system and help with viral infections. So it's exciting because that's going to help with the people with potential cancer as well.
You get a twofer on that one, sounds like. And yeah. We've heard a lot of people poo-pooing vitamin C, and I've practitioners who do IV vitamin C therapy, et cetera. Is it helpful to help decrease your risk of cancer or even to some degree as an adjunct to treatment?
Yeah, it certainly can be an adjunct to treatment. Utilizing it even alongside other therapies, standards of care therapies can be very beneficial. I know people who do vitamin C IVs not having cancer, just to do it once a month or a couple times a month just to help boost their immune system and to help prevent disease. It's a wise thing to do. It can help with detox pathways, help with your liver. There's a lot of benefits to vitamin C. So, and then as far as people with active cancer, it can, high dose vitamin C can act as on a cancer cell as an oxidant, kind of like chemotherapy, and help kill cancer directly too. And there's numerous studies that show that. So any doctor that's poo-pooing that is not looking at the literature. And we talked earlier about why are doctors looking at this stuff? It's kind of sad because you could do a Google, anybody could do a Google Scholar search on curcumin and cancer, and you'll find hundreds of pages of research articles. Why aren't the doctors doing that? I don't know. Do they just not have time? Do they just not care? Do they just worried about losing their job? I don't know. I can't. Everybody might have different reasons. But I do think that some doctors are waking up and standing up for the truth. It's been evident this last year, so that's good.
You know, I think that I'm happy to see that. Like everything, it's going to come from the bottom up. And in this instance, I think the patients are going to need to drive this. Stop going to people who don't have your best interests at heart. Stop going into hospitals and locations where they have no interest in a complementary, holistic approach. They understand money. And when they stop making it, then they start changing their attitude, I think. One of the things I've learned recently, the power of is CBD oil. And I've seen it as I'm a surgeon, an ear, nose, and throat surgeon, and I've seen it help people need less pain medicine after tonsillectomies. And the inflammation that you see usually post-op was non-existent, which I thought was amazing. So from an anti-inflammatory standpoint, how does CBD play a role in keeping people healthy?
Well, CBD has so many benefits to it. And you just are touching on one with its power to decrease inflammation. The ability to cross the blood-brain barrier to decrease inflammation is key to that too. Mm. The biggest mistake I see with people with CBD, because you'll hear people, oh, I tried CBD, it didn't work. You want to make sure that whatever CBD product you're using is USDA certified organic, first of all. And then you have to take a high enough dose that it's going to make a difference. I've had patients come in, oh, I tried CBD for my pain. Well, let me see what you're using. It's a 5 milligram CBD capsule or something. That's not going to, that's not gonna, enough to do anything. So you have to dose it appropriately. You have to load your body. And you need to be taking a good quality CBD because there's a lot of junk on the market too. I mean, you could buy CBD in the gas station. So you have to look for a quality product and a high enough dose. So make sure that you're getting some professional help with that.
That's an excellent point. You know, we're coming to the end of the show and I feel like we just scratched the surface, but I want the listeners to know that your book, the things that we were talking about, this is expanded in your book. So the nutraceuticals, herbs, vitamins, supplements, even we didn't talk about things like medicinal mushrooms and the Rife therapy and energy medicine. And I'd love to have you back so we can go through that, because these are things that they all work together in tandem and people need to get your book. And again, they can get it on your website. Am I correct? How can just give us an idea of how we can buy or even get the book and go to your website and learn more about you?
So like one cancer book that you're speaking of is the Stop Fighting Cancer, Start Treating the Cause. And again, I titled it because the emotional side of we're going to fight cancer, we're going to beat this, I think it's the wrong attitude to take. It's that we need to embrace this. What do I need to learn from this? How can I deal with it? How am I going to treat this and treat the cause and get rid of it? It's the better way to do it. But in that book, I just rewrote it again last year. First came out about 10 years ago. But this new edition is expanded. It's almost 600 pages. You can buy it on Amazon, but you can also download it for free at our website. So again, one of the things about our clinic is we try to run it like a ministry. We have to charge it. People are going to come to us, but we give away, we have hundreds of pages of blog posts, hundreds of videos that you can learn things from. All our books are downloadable for free, no catches, no gimmicks. So just go to our website and look at books and blog posts. You can download the books. I have multiple other books as well. We just want people to be informed. Because just like you said, Dr. George, if people became their own advocate and advocates for their elderly parents and their children, we'd make better choices to other physicians, maybe better choices with our nutrition and our diet, better choices in our life. And from the ground up, we'll fund this groundspring of people that want better care. And that's the only way that we're going to change the system. So you go to our website, Conners Clinic, ConnersClinic.com, and you'll find that. Help yourself to whatever you need there.
Dr. Conners, thank you so much for coming on. I really do want to have you come back to talk about the energy medicine and the other modalities, because I think knowledge is power. And I love what you do, and I'm you're a blessing. So thank you.
Well, thank you. You are too. Continue your work. I love what you do too.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.